Welcome to Heath on the Hedge. This is a podcast about marriage, magic, and beyond. My name is Merlin.
And I'm Shay.
What are we talking about today, Shay?
Well, today we're talking to the dead.
Talking to the dead.
It's all about necromancy.
Necromancy.
So since today is Witchy Wednesday, we thought it would be very appropriate to talk all things dead.
Vague definition of necromancy is any and all divination practices that involve spirits of the dead. So,
that pretty much sums up any kind of practice that has anything to do with, like, trying to reach or speak or contact a spirit from another realm.
Mm-hmm.
Very interesting.
Very interesting.
Definitely, like what would you say is the stigma around it that you may have experienced or heard?
That it's evil, like, because it's usually like considered one of the most like black, like dark form of magics,
right?
And I would definitely consider it in the realm of dark magics, but it's. It's honestly, in my eyes, no different than any other kind of divination.
Right. Well, what I think is so interesting about that, that you say that, because to me, necromancy is just pretty much like it's honestly like a form of mediumship.
Yeah,
for sure. It is literally like when you think of a medium or a person who speaks to spirits, mm-hmm. or like a person who has that ability to contact the dead.
Yeah.
That is like what I think of when I think of necromancy. And what's so funny is that we even had in our information that like shamanism, like going back like to shamanism, being like one of the really big deep parts of history, like so many historical cultures have shamans, and they even have necromancy in their practices that they would, you know, use as ways to contact spirits and then use them for going into the underworld and receiving messages and delivering messages and pretty much being able to answer questions. So I feel like it's interesting that we look at it as such a bad thing when really it's been ingrained in our culture for so long as a way to show that you were in touch with the spirit world.
You can date necromancy back to 7220, somewhere between 7220 and 5850 BC in the Stone Age with like Neanderthals. So it's pretty old.
Yeah. It's very interesting that there was a lot of research that we looked at that showed how far necromancy goes back into history and just kind of how the entire thing has been changed throughout time. And I find that really fascinating that the way that we view it these days is completely different than it originated. So.
For sure.
It's very interesting to think about.
Yeah, because it was a pretty common practice in most spiritualities and like accepted witchcrafts until, what do we say, the 1300s?
Mm-hmm.
People started to see it as a bad thing. It basically became the line between good and evil magic, like dark and light magic.
Mm-hmm.
And it even like... influences like that view influences stuff on into like today's like popular culture with like werewolves and vampires, like we were researching earlier, and that was all considered like the study of like werewolves and vampires and like that kind of folklore was wrapped into
mm-hmm.
what would be considered necromancy. So it was pretty common historically, and then out of nowhere like it just all of a sudden became like, that's the bad magic.
Exactly.
And it's funny Well, go ahead. Were you going to say something? You're probably going to say what I was going to say.
No, I was going to just say, like, the question that we had, like, where do we think that that falls on the line of magic and spirituality?
Oh, yeah.
When it comes to necromancy. Like, so I know that we were talking earlier about how we definitely... I know, like, at first I was thinking to myself, like, I don't know if I would consider necromancy to be, like, a huge part of magic. And then I had to think about it again, kind of like, okay, wait, yes, it is. But in a way, I guess, I've always viewed it as such a separate thing. Like, in my growing up, it just wasn't a part of what I would consider a practice. Yeah. It was always more so, like, anyone could talk to the dead, or anyone could talk to a spirit, or anyone could talk to their ancestors.
Yeah.
So it wasn't, like, a completely closed, like, practice to me. But in some of the things that we read, that necromancy was really originated as a way to receive messages and talk to your loved ones and, you know, go into the underworld and pretty much, like, guide souls to get to where they're going. It was pretty much like another part of spiritual practice. So
yeah,
it's very interesting how that spans throughout time and how it can be intertwined with not only, you know, Christianity or witchcraft, but it also can be seen in shamanism and in African practices as well. I mean, voodoo, hoodoo, I mean, you literally have it in every single culture. So
sure,
it's very interesting how that took a turn from being such a very widely accepted practice
sure
to being very much taboo.
And one of the big faiths that, like, look down on it so much is, like, Catholicism and Christianity. And what I think is peculiar about that is sainthood, like the saints of Catholicism, like, they're literally praying and communicating to dead people that they deemed wise enough or, like, important enough to their God to like, call a saint. So, I mean, that in itself, if you want to get down to the nitty gritty, is necromancy, but it's
right,
like, completely accepted in modern culture, like, throughout.
Right. That's what I think is very interesting, is that it's pretty much like, we can do this as long as it's seen okay in
yeah
our eyes. But if you're doing it, bad, like
yeah,
shun, shame, darkness, you are evil. And,
yeah,
and I think that that's kind of hilarious. Just that, that backhanded, you know, I can do it, but you cannot do it type of thing, which is really deep rooted in a lot of, and a lot of religions. I feel like a lot of people find that they are not able to fully be expressive in those ways. Yeah.
I guess the next question would be, have you ever practiced necromancy?
So I would say yes. My story is kind of on the side of naive, but so I've had a lot of times that I have tried to contact spirits or things of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of those happened, you know, when I was younger and I really didn't understand what I was doing. And now that I am older and a lot wiser in this path, I do not do things that I feel would put me in a position to be uncomfortable or just feel like I wasn't in any control.
Yeah.
So I really don't do a lot of necromancy these days. I'm like, I mean, of course, like, I try to contact any kind of, like, deity that I might, you know, have a connection to, or sometimes I want to receive messages from my ancestors, that
mm-hmm
kind of thing. But for the most part, you know, I keep it very, very controlled and under a situation of which I don't expect or ask a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I try not to overwrite that situation. But I did have a specific situation when I was younger that turned into one of, like, the most, like, terrifying experiences of my life, which I really think kind of made me more afraid of trying to reach out to spirits. Like, for the longest time, like, I was pretty much just null to even attempting because I was just so terrified. But long story short, I performed a seance with a bunch of kids, like, and experienced what I could only imagine would be what you would say is a possession of some sort. And the only way that I can describe it is that it almost felt like I, like, if a movie had taken over in your mind and was just like the only thing that you could see, it's almost like I was blacked out and there was like this movie playing that I just was watching, and I didn't really understand what was happening, but I pretty much was like, I was looking at this elderly, well, not even elderly, he was like a middle-aged Indian man. And he was shot in battle and was laying like on this gurney, and these people, nurses and doctors, were around him trying to revive him, and he was pretty much like dying like on this table. And then when I finally came to my body, like enough to kind of realize what was happening, because I don't even know if I had like passed out or if I blacked out or what, but it was almost like, because I woke up and I wasn't even where I was when I started. It was like I was in a room with a bunch of kids and we were doing all this craziness, and then the next thing I knew, I was like back in my cabin and I was like in the fetal position, like just in a corner, and I didn't know what had happened or how I got there, but the entire time was me just experiencing what had happened to this man and the pain that he felt, and it felt like it had happened to me. And so it was just such a scary experience that when I snapped out of it, I was like, I am never going to do a seance again. I am never going to try to contact spirits again. But at that time, I was also so young. I mean, like in high school, I had no idea what I was doing. And now that I'm older, I know clearly, you know, you want to protect yourself, obviously. Like, we were kids and had no idea what we were doing, and so it's a completely different experience from when you're educated versus, you know, not knowing a damn thing and putting yourself at risk, because there's not things to be played with in the underworld
for sure. And I think, and that would lead into like my story of necromancy, or one of my stories of necromancy, I think a good approach to it is definitely like respect for whoever you're trying to communicate with, because I've found in the past, if you go into any sort of like spiritual communication without proper preparation or like the proper respect, like you're typically gonna have a more negative encounter. And mostly most of my necromancy now is more along the lines of like working with the ancestors of the land, like the ancestors of the land of like wherever I'm at. Like, I've started working with like the ancestors of like, because I work in Manitou Springs, Colorado, so I'm there a lot of the time. So there's been times like if I, you know, feel compelled to like meditate or anything like that, I will make an offering of like coffee or tobacco or something to like the ancestors or like the gods of this land, because I kind of think that this is like their territory. And whenever I honor the ancestors of the place where I'm at, it almost makes it easier for me to communicate with like the deities or like my own ancestors, because like this isn't those deities or my ancestors' territory. So it's kind of like me breaking bread with the ancestors of this land so that my ancestors can come and work with me.
Right. And I think that that's really cool. Leaving it open for you to experience those types of things and being able to like receive the messages that are,
for sure,
you know, that you may not otherwise have been able to receive.
And I've also found, which could be like a tip in the future for anybody, if you do deity work and you feel like a detachment from your deities that you typically work with, honoring the ancestors of wherever you live can kind of strengthen that a little bit, because like I work with Odin specifically, like almost exclusively, and he's definitely not a deity that's always around, but he does, I've found, and this is only my opinion, this is just my pseudo spirituality, but he likes when I interact with other spirits, like it's my own quest. It's like my own quest of wisdom that I'm going on. And I'm kind of rambling now, so I guess we could. Do you have any other experiences?
No. I mean, I've had a lot of experiences. I've had some that were just really small experiences. And I would say, what is the first experience that you ever had that made you believe in ghost or spirits or being able to contact the dead, basically? Like, what experience did you have that really made you believe?
I used to live in a house when I was younger. It was an old trailer house and out in the country, and like weird things would happen there. Like real, like just stuff would come flying off the walls, or cabinet doors would open and close, and
oh wow,
that kind of stuff.
That would be pretty scary.
Yeah. So that was like my first like balls to the wall, something is going on experience. I was probably like 19 or 20-ish, I'd say,
mm-hmm.
at that time.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say my first experience that really made me believe was I was in high school, sleeping over at a friend's house on a weeknight, and we were both, like, this was back when I was, like I said, kind of going through my first stint of really trying to break into, like, witchcraft, and mm-hmm. we were kind of, like, I would say in our own little coven. Like, we were definitely, you know, talking about things, planning things, trying to do rituals and stuff together, even though we were super young and really just didn't know what we were doing. Mm-hmm. But at one point we had a Ouija board.
Oh yeah.
And like a candle.
Yeah.
And we were like sitting on the floor and had our hand on it, and we were telling the candle to you know, flicker if there was like a presence, and if there was anyone here, to please, like, you know, spell a word or try to you know, contact us. And I remember just like thinking to myself, like, this is, you know, complete crap. Like, nothing is going to happen. Mm-hmm. And I just remember, like, all of a sudden this candle like blew out, and like the little, what do you call those? The little planchet. Yeah. The little planchet, like, mm-hmm. like flew off the board. Yeah. And I was just like, all right, I'm done.
Yeah.
I was like, and we're not doing this again. No, thank you. And I'm out. I will not. But that was my first experience, next to the other one, because that was like, that happened. And then the situation happened with the camping with friends, which was like a whole different thing, but it was their idea. And I was pretty reluctant to the whole thing, but mm-hmm. because I know how it is when you're doing stuff with spirits, you need to take precaution. So I think that that's gonna lead into our next question, which is like, what are the misconceptions that you were told, like, as a young adolescent, or like, what were the things that you may have believed about necromancy that are not true?
Well, like, I mean, I was raised as a Jehovah's Witness. We'll just get right back on that train again. But, yeah, like, they basically taught, which, I mean, you get that with a lot of, like Christians, like Baptists and, like, the more old school American Christian traditions.
Exactly.
But basically they taught us, like, if you're talking to anything that's not God or Jesus, you're talking to a demon.
So pretty much right off the bat, you are definitely like a little necromancer.
Yeah, for sure. Which is
okay.
In some ways kind of true, because like, that's another misconception.
This is true.
Like, most people just rope dead humans, like ghosts, into necromancy. But like, demons and other spirit work is very much
mm-hmm.
a part of necromancy. Like, that is necromancy. Like,
right.
Because most of your like early like Christian and Catholic monks,
mm-hmm.
or like we'll call them wizards, like the early Christian wizards, they were all dabbling in like demonology and like communicating with demons, because they believed that, you know, demons and other spirits had like higher knowledges than we do. So they would summon and wrangle demons for like their spiritual cosmic secrets, and that was necromancy.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's really weird. Well, that kind of ropes into my answer is that, I mean, growing up, literally everything was considered of the, like, of the dark sorts, you know? Like, yeah. If you were doing anything that was considered to be too sexualized, too...
Yeah.
Leaning towards magic, to you're trying to contact spirits type things. Like, I mean, we were talking about that earlier, how our mainstream media and a lot of things that we grew up with
mm-hmm.
were then just roped into that is witchcraft. That is dark magic. That is necromancy. That is yeah. evil. And a lot of that blanketed over so many things that were really, I mean, had nothing to do with that. Yeah. Like, it went into music, it went into media, TV, movies. It kind of took over all kinds of parts that just were nothing to do with that.
Yeah.
And then I think that that's where it's kind of become that line. Like, everyone, like, when someone thinks of witchcraft, they think of evil.
Yeah.
They think of dark magic, yeah, which, like, we were talking about. And... Right. We were talking about that harsh line between, like, light magic and dark magic, or good magic versus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't believe that I don't believe in good and evil magic.
I would say I wouldn't even say good. Yeah. Pretty much like light and dark. Yeah.
I believe there's magic, and then there's the balance of magic. You're either, I mean, there's not one side or the other. It's all one,
right?
One thing.
Right. But it's weird that all of that kind of has made the basis of witchcraft. Like, yeah. Honestly, necromancy had nothing to do with witchcraft to begin with, per se. It was really a spiritual practice of which was
for
used
sure.
for because people to kind of get, like, oracle answers and to be able to, like, reach out and talk to their ancestors and have spiritual guided experiences. But then we turned that into, well, only certain types of reaching out to spirits is okay, versus if you're doing it under the guise of not Christianity or not reaching out to, like, let's say a okayed source, then it was, you're doing something dark.
Yeah. And if you, like, look at pre-Christian, like, cultures, like, they wouldn't have even had a title for witches. Like, magic was just a part of everyday life. Like,
well, a lot of times in back in those days, they were calling, you know, it wasn't seen as bad. It was actually seen as, like, you were consulting, like, the know-all, like the oracle. Yeah.
But what I'm saying is that it wasn't something separate from your everyday life. Like,
right.
It was, like, because, like, when Christianity came along, you got the Puritans and the Quakers, and they tried to, like, this magic stuff is something that's completely separate from our God, and you didn't see that in other cultures before, like, before Christianity.
Right. So,
not to bash Christians.
No, not at all. So let's just be, like, realist here. What are the dangers? What are the dangers of, if you are going to dabble in necromancy, or if you're thinking about it,
mm-hmm.
or if you have, right? Mm-hmm. What are some of the dangers, or that you know of, / have experienced, or that you have read about? Those kinds of things.
Well, depending on what type of spirits you're trying to deal with, there's etiquette. Like, you have to worry about etiquette. You don't just go into it all willy-nilly and be like, hey, Mr. Demon, like, can you do this shit for me? And, like, sometimes you might find a demon or a ghost or a spirit that's okay with that kind of communication, but more often than not, there's gonna be
some chaos that ensues.
Yeah, there's a little bit of, like, a respectful ritual that should go into every situation of necromancy. Like, make an offering, meditate with the spirit a little bit, kind of get a feeling for it,
and protect yourself.
Yeah protect yourself for sure. Carry a protective crystal
and just and make sure that
cast
definitely.
A circle. That's something that we were talking about earlier.
That
was the may have been where casting a circle started, was with necromancy. Didn't we talk about that?
Right. We were saying that, like, in the history of necromancy practices, that they were big on always casting a circle of protection in order to make sure that whatever they were contacting, that they were protected from that. Because, I mean, because obviously when you're going into, let's say, the whole deep realm of the deceased, of the realm of the undead, you really have no idea what it is that you are going to encounter, because there's many things that exist in the realm.
And I think a good safe place to start if you're going to dabble in necromancy would be maybe working with your own ancestors, because they're your family. Like, I've heard people word it like this before, but they've got skin in the game, aka you. Like, you're an extension of them, so they're probably looking out for your best interest rather than, like, what I do typically is, I mean, I'll reach out to any spirit just to see who's out there.
So that does lead into our next question, is that, like, so necromancy, is that part of your practice now?
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's probably the biggest part of my practice now, mostly with, like, working with, like, the ancestors of the land. And I mean, my patron deity is Odin, and he's a god of death. So, like, death is a big meditation.
Mm-hmm.
And the spirits of death is a big meditation within my practice. Like, so yeah, I would say yes.
Yeah. Well, and that's pretty cool. I really, like, I admire the fact that you're not afraid to, you know, reach out to the spirits of the beyond and take a chance and just, you know, seeing what comes back at you.
My philosophy is that I want to learn as much as I can from everything that I can as often as I can.
I mean, that's a great philosophy, right? You know, the entirety of living is to learn something.
Yeah.
And to be a student of experience.
For sure.
Absolutely. I would say for me personally, you know, I mean, it is a part of my practice. I just don't do it very often.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I do a little bit of ancestor work, and I'm still kind of working my way up to that. I haven't done a lot of it, but for the most part, I have tried, like I said, reaching out to some of my ancestors.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had times where I, you know, sat with meditation and just kind of opened up that receiving to see what would reach out to me.
Yeah.
Because I do kind of feel like I have some kind of mediumship abilities. Like, here and there, I get these intrusive messages in my head that almost kind of sound like thoughts that are not mine.
Yeah.
And then it's almost like I have to pause for a second. Like, wait a second, was that me, or was that just where did that even come from? And then sometimes it takes me a minute, and then I click and I go, man, maybe that wasn't even me. That was just, you know, a something that was in the midst that was trying to tell me something. And I've had that happen, where it was a message, and I told someone, and they were like, holy shit, you know, like that was, you know, my great uncle from beyond. You're like,
see, usually most of the messages I get are for other people. Like, I rarely have a spirit come to me and, like, wants to tell me something.
Right.
Well,
that's usually how it is.
But it's one person in particular, like one of me and Shay's mutual friends. Like, I've been friends with her for like 15 plus years, but there's always been, like, a connection between us. And, like, it's weird. Like, I will just get, like, weird, it made me think of it when you were talking about thoughts that didn't feel like your own thoughts. I'll get, like, these flashes of, like, words and images in my head, and, like, I'll know that it's about this person, and I will, like, message her and be like, hey, like, this might sound batshit crazy, but, like, I'm gonna tell you this, and then you do with it what you will. And then I'll tell her the message, and she'll be like, holy fucking shit, like, how did you do that? And I'll be like, I don't know. It's just something that I can do.
You know what my theory is? My theory on this is that, I mean, obviously in tribes, like in different cultures, they have, you know, what they would call, like, the shaman, the eye of the, of the group, who gets the messages and is spiritually sensitive and is able to do those things. And so now that we don't have that in our American culture, I mean, isn't it just safe to say that we're all, I mean, not all of us, but that some of us are just those people from, from our groups that are spiritually sensitive. And we are out here really, just exposed to the, to the spiritual waves of information that are just being thrown out here. And,
absolutely.
It's very interesting, that it's not more openly accepted when it comes from us as people, but in our culture, it's okay when it's in pop culture, like, which comes to our next question. Like, so in pop culture, like music, movies, TV, we get a lot of necromancy that is portrayed as like just a cool fad. So when you're watching those kinds of things on TV, what do you think about that? Like, how does that, how does that make you feel, like, when you see that, knowing, like, how hilarious it is that these, most of those people are going and sitting down being told that it's wrong, and then here we are watching it for entertainment?
Yeah, you're talking, like, in, like, what comes to my mind for some reason every time we're talking about pop culture, like, witchcraft and pop culture or anything like that, is the Sabrina show. Like, like, it's a great show. Like, I love it for, like, entertainment purposes, but like, it is so unlike what being a real witch, wizard, shaman, whatever you call yourself. It's so completely way out in left field, but it's fun. But like, their ideas or ideals of like what necromancy and like spirit work and stuff like that is so just out there.
I was gonna say it's more of like the it's more of the generalized like idea of what most people would think happens when you're thinking of witchcraft and covens and that kind of thing. So it's not
taking the stereotype and running with it.
It's the stereotype blown up to times 10,
which is fun.
Right. And so like, one of the other examples that we saw was, like with Game of Thrones, and like how we have the White Walkers, and that is an entire episode of, or an entire, ongoing situation with necromancy. Like, you literally have an entire army of the undead,
and that's
that
like,
is being ruled by one particular like all-seeing eye that then turns out to be, I mean, spoiler alert if you never watched Game of Thrones, but just the fact that it was part of the show, and so many people are like into Game of Thrones. However, that would be a huge no-no in most people's religion or religious practices, yet Game of Thrones was the biggest show that most people loved in 2018 and beyond.
Yeah, like, look at Harry Potter. Harry Potter's a good example.
Exactly, like, which honestly, what's funny is I've known so many people when I was growing up that weren't even allowed to watch Harry Potter because they said that it was of the devil. However, what's so funny is that we really use it to our advantage as a way to say this is our entertainment.
For sure, and like, even my, like, my old boss, he was a, like, a really, really good guy, but he was a very, like, devout Christian, and he loved Harry Potter. Like, he freaking loved it because he saw that it wasn't real witchcraft. Like, because I talked about that. We talked about the one time, like, where does this fall into, like, the anti-witchcraft part of Christianity? And he's like, this isn't real witchcraft. Like, this is a fantasy show. And, like, I thought that was cool that he was able to separate, like, a Christian, like a devout balls-to-the-wall Christian was able to separate, like, this is fake, like, entertainment value witchcraft. Like, and, like, he knew the difference. So, I don't know. I kind of thought that was cool.
Right. Well, I mean, I feel like what's, like I said, what's funny is that we've always said this. There's such a, there's an underlying witchcraft in every single religious practice. And so I think it's just so funny how necromancy kind of plays into that. It is literally an underlying part of almost every single type of practice when we're prayer. When we're talking, exactly, when we're talking about speaking to our loved ones, speaking to our ancestors, talking to the spirits and the realms and the gods and the and all of that is a way of contacting something outside of this, outside of this realm. Right. Yeah. And that is literally necromancy.
For sure.
So I think that I find that to be such a, it's almost like the the cradle of all the eggs in the basket. Oh, you totally, know, like yeah. you're almost like, hey, if I take this basket away, all my eggs are going to go crashing down to the ground and whoo-choo! Yeah. It's over with now. Yeah. But we don't see that right now. We see it as like a, oh, we're just going to push one of these eggs to the one side and just keep it away from all the other eggs because yeah. that one's the bad egg. And not even realizing that, honestly, okay, we're all in danger. We're all in danger here. Take cover. No one is safe. This is a dangerous situation for all of us. Uh-huh. And, you know, like, all we need to know is, like, be ready. Like, if you're going to be out here taking the time to light your candles, to light your incense, to do your protection, and reach out to these beings from beyond, just be smart about it and make sure that you're yeah. doing it in a way that is smart and that is not of harm to anyone else. And I think that that's what's the honestly, that's the line that really what has been set in place between what makes it good and what makes it bad. Yeah. And then it has been flipped times 10, because really all we needed to know was, you know, do it with the intent of no one being, you know, harmed or bringing evil upon, yeah. you know, yourself or others, which is really the biggest part of any practice.
Yeah. I think something that people need to realize if they're going to go into like practicing necromancy is that these other beings don't have the same moral code, the same moral, like, things that we think are a big deal are like not a big deal at all to them. Like,
exactly.
Death, for instance, right. like it doesn't bother some of them to like just outright kill somebody or like put a curse on somebody just because you were being disrespectful. It's like working with the Fae or any sort of spirit like that. Like mm-hmm. their rule book is a whole lot different than our rule book. So like right. you need to go into it with as much respect for the encounter as possible right. because anything could possibly happen.
And be open.
Yes,
be and open. Also just know that you may or may not actually gain anything from it.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes you go into something hoping that you'll receive a message.
Keep it simple.
And you may receive nothing. But I really respect the practice of being able to tap into that realm. And I feel like as a spiritually sensitive person, it is... I almost feel like I wish that I knew how to enjoy it a little bit more instead of being as terrified of it as I am.
Well, it's something you gotta build up. It's
yeah.
It's definitely a magical muscle because it is flinchy. Spirits are scary.
Because that's what's so weird is like, yes, there are some of us out here who are very naturally gifted in speaking to the dead and very much do not want it. I have spent most of my years completely cutting off that antenna. Like yeah. I pretty much said, listen, this channel is closed and I do not want to be contacted. Please take your letters to somebody else's mailbox.
For sure. And that's okay. Like you don't have to be comfortable with it. Like if a person's not comfortable with it, you probably shouldn't be doing
but,
that.
But ever since I became a witch, I did become a lot more open receptively to it. Sure. And I wanted to kind of hope to develop that mm-hmm. skill because I want to be able to eventually help others with being able to contact the dead because I think it is cool.
It's very cool. And like we were talking about like shamanic practice and stuff earlier, like mm-hmm. that's like a part, that's literally a part of our DNA. Like every culture everywhere in the world, like you go back far enough and there were tribal shaman. And like I think it's really cool that you were talking about, like, because we don't have many shaman in Western culture anymore, that it's mm-hmm. almost like the spirit realm is appointing shamans.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's kind of how they saw it. Like yeah. in cultures, like even if you like, so let's say if you were to go to like the Yoruba tribe, like in Africa, like mm-hmm. their culture was to basically have appointed shamans of their group,
for sure.
which they may not use the word shaman. They may use a completely different word in their culture, but yeah. clearly like when we think of shaman, we think of like the appointed spiritual advisor. And indeed. That is what they call them in yeah. their culture is basically, it is the spiritual advisor. Like when you need a fix for a hex or a fix for, you know, needing or a bad contact that you have with a spirit mm-hmm. or you're needing an answer from an ancestor from beyond and you are needing some spiritual guidance, you hit up the spiritual advisor of the of the tribe. And that is the person that gives you the contact through that line to say, okay, this is what our spiritual realm is saying to us. And that used to be part of our culture. So I still believe, me personally, there was so many things that were engraved in our culture that we just, you know, tried to beat away with Western culture. And I believe that it is ingrained in us to still follow those patterns because they're in us, even if we don't know where they're coming from.
I like that you mentioned like that not all practices call shaman, because shaman, that name comes from, it's a Siberian, like, holy person, like, or like spirit worker. So like, I would say, like, my practice is very shamanic, but I don't call myself a shaman. I would call myself a spirit worker.
Right.
Like, I think that's the more culturally sensitive term. Like, I think that's something to be aware of as well, because that's a big part of magical practices is cultural appropriation. Like, we got to be respectful of not only the spirits, but of other cultures, and make sure that we're not just blatantly disrespectfully stealing from other cultures.
Yeah, like absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think that that's a great way to end it, pretty much, that, you know, when it comes to, you know, necromancy and your practices, like, do your research, find what is comfortable for you, and always take precautions to just do it safely, do it protected wise, you know, whether that's, you know, calling your corners or lighting some sage or Palo Santo or incense or holy water or whatever spray. Just make sure you're taking precautions to be receptive and be ready for anything, but also, you know, take cover. You never know what you might find under those.
And also know that you have boundaries in spiritual communication. You can tell a spirit no. Like,
absolutely. Boundaries are there.
If you summoned it and you were respectful about it, you can also make it go away.
Exactly. You have the right to shut it down. So we are really coming to such a nice flow with all of our weekly topics. And I love sharing all of these really cool episodes with everyone. Like, it's been so nice to just talk about this kind of thing.
Yeah, because this is stuff that we would normally like talk with each other about on a road trip or something.
Exactly. Like, just so 4 hours of silence to talk.
So it's kind of cool to like,
for sure,
continue talking with each other, but also sharing it with you guys.
Absolutely.
And speaking of sharing it with you guys, you should go check us out on our social media accounts. You can find us at Heathen in the Hedge Podcast on both Instagram and Facebook.
And we have a Patreon now, so please go ahead. If you find our Linktree link, which we've been sharing on all of our socials, it will have our Patreon in it. There are a couple of different tiers, tier A, B, and C. It gives you information on what perks you get when you join a tier, and they are super affordable. Help us out. We are looking for your support, and we always appreciate it.
Thank you for watching or listening to The Heathen in the Hedge. I am Merlin.
And I am Shay. And blessed be y'all.
Yeah, we love you.
Thanks for being here.
Woo. Peace. Yeah.